and worldwide on the internet at WISR680.com. It's your turn, 724-283-2525. And now, it's your turn with Dave Malarkey.
Good afternoon once again, everyone. Welcome. Nice to have you with us on the Thursday edition of It's Your Turn. And we have open talk to begin the program today. Guests will join us later. You realize the regatta at Lake Arthur is just around the corner? It is. And we'll tell you all about it, or rather our guest will. Holly Muchnock will be here. The regatta is Saturday and Sunday, August 5th and 6th. So just around the corner indeed. How many years have they had the regatta? Boy, I don't know. It's become quite a tradition. It's got to be close to 15 or 20, doesn't it? I think, yeah. And we'll find out a little bit later. And we're also going to be talking about immigration today. Subject that's been very much in the news, actually, in the past 6 months, ever since Donald Trump was inaugurated as president. And he instituted the first of his travel bans, and there have been three or four of them since then. They've been shot down by the federal courts. They've been readjusted. They've been brought back. And I'm not quite sure where it stands right now. Supreme Court is partially in effect, partially not. I don't know. We'll talk about that with a person who really knows. I don't know. And I think it's hard for most of us to follow. If we're, we don't deal with that ever. We will talk with an immigration lawyer. She's been involved in this area for most of her career, as a matter of fact. Her name is Shoba Wadia, and she'll be with us a little bit later on the program today. So, good lineup of guests and open talk to begin the program today. 283-2525 is our number. 283-2525. I understand they caught the bank robber today. Right? I didn't get to hear all of the news because I was doing some recording and taking care of some other stuff, but it turned out to be the same guy that robbed the Citizens Bank branch at Giant Eagle Clearview back on Sunday. Same guy robbed the First National out of Prospect yesterday, and the state police nabbed him this morning. 283-2525 is the number, 283-2525, open talk. Hi, caller, this is Dave Malarkey. Go right ahead. It's your turn.
Hi, Mr. Malarkey.
Hello there. It's Dave. We're not too formal around here, so
all right,
just make it Dave. That'll be great.
You wish. I'd like to ask you a question if I can, please.
Sure, please.
Is there curfew still up?
In the city of Butler?
Yes.
Not to my knowledge. I think it was temporary to begin with. It may have been extended by a day or two, but I don't think it's still in effect.
The reason why I'm asking this question. I don't think people understand what the word curfew means. This is, my understanding of the definition of curfew means you must be in by a certain time inside a building. But nobody was inside the building at that time.
Well, I'm not sure. The mayor of the city of Butler issued that.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, it was exactly 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, and I've heard nothing about being taken down or continuing or anything. I've heard nothing.
Well, I believe that it was initially for several days, and I think it may have been extended for a day or two, but I don't think it's still in effect. I'm not sure that there's any need anymore. I mean, things are, getting back to normal. I don't see too much more junk damaged flood items out on the street anymore like we did a couple of weeks ago.
Unfortunately, until the next disaster happens, they come in threes, remember?
Well, that's true, too. Yeah. I can remember there was a town, when I was a little kid, we did not have a curfew, but we sometimes visited relatives in East Brady, and they had a curfew in East Brady for kids. Mm-hmm. They blew the fire siren, believe it or not, every night. I'm serious. Mm-hmm. Every night at 9 o'clock, they had one blast of the fire siren, and that was the curfew, and kids had to be off the street a long time ago.
Well, if my memory serves me correctly, Butler City used to have a curfew.
Really?
There used to be one. But no one obeyed it. So I don't know how they would go about enforcing it.
You know, now that you mention that, and I didn't grow up in Butler, but I do remember, if I had to guess, it was 20 years ago. There was some sort of an attempt to reinstitute that. Why, I don't remember. I don't remember who was mayor. But eventually, it fell through because they didn't have anywhere to put the people that they picked up for violating the curfew. I mean, they certainly weren't going to put them in the Butler County prison.
No.
And I chuckle because when you said nobody paid any attention to it, it reminded me, boy, maybe somebody, some of our listeners may remember this. I think it was about 20 years ago, and I know they tried to institute it here in Butler, but it fell flat because they didn't have anywhere to put the people, put the kids.
Well, I'll be honest with you, I wish they would have reinstated. I really do wish they would. I wish they would have reinstated because it's getting really bad.
Do you think it should be up to a certain age? I mean, I don't know whether you can have a curfew for adults, do you?
No, I would say up to probably 16.
Okay.
And then have them up. Well, I know the Butler County, when the prom, we had the Butler High School prom. The drivers have to be off the road by 11 o'clock.
That was the old, what did they call that? They had that when I was a kid, too. Cinderella license, that's what it was called.
Possibly. But they still have to be off the road. But let's see, this year they still have to be off the road by 11 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
They did, and I don't know how in the world they figured that one out.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. I don't know. It's kind of a thing from years gone by. I don't know whether it would fly again or not.
Well, could you please check into it, see if that curfew is still up, and let us know?
We will. Okay. I'd be very surprised if it is. I'm almost positive that it was a temporary thing. But we'll see if we can check it out in the newsroom.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thanks. Bye-bye. 283-2525. Anybody know the answer to that? Did you hear anything about that, Pat? I, for some reason, I had it in my mind that it expired that weekend, that first weekend after the... the problem was we had, I think this is what the mayor had in mind, Mayor Tom Donaldson. He didn't want people from out of the area, either out of town or from other neighborhoods, driving through the West End because there was still mud and muck everywhere. There were lots of damaged flood items out on the sidewalk. And it was a mess, quite frankly. And they still had barricades up in some places. And I think that was the point of it. It was to, rubberneckers. And we all do that. We're all guilty, right? But the purpose, as I understood it at least, was to keep, if you didn't live there, you weren't supposed to go there, which is very understandable. But, you can't, that wouldn't be justifiable for any length of time, I don't think. It couldn't be, no. If anybody knows, let us know, 283-2525, 283-2525. Boy, I don't know. I hadn't thought about a curfew until that caller put it in my mind for ages. I do remember as a kid going to East Brady and that they'd blow the fire siren at the East Brady Volunteer Fire Department at 9 o'clock every night. And kids, I don't know what the age was, I have no idea. Had to be off the street. They weren't allowed to be out on the street. Still be playing in the yard. But they weren't allowed to be wandering aimlessly around. I sometimes wonder, well, I always wonder, when I see young people wandering around at 5 o'clock in the morning when I'm coming to work. I can remember a police officer told me once, nothing good happens at 5 o'clock in the morning. When you see people out and about on foot, that there's usually something untoward going on. I don't remember who told me that, but somebody did. But late at night, I don't know. They tried to set up, boy, the details of this are so vague. They tried to set up a place apart from the Butler County Prison. They weren't going to put kids into prison. But they tried to set up a temporary holding facility or something like that. But it just didn't work. I mean, you know, I had to wait for parents to come and get him and yada, yada, yada. And it just, you know, it logistically, it failed. And therefore, the curfew failed. And I have no idea why it was instituted. We weren't having any big drug problem back then. It's many years ago. 283-2525 is the number, 283-2525. Sometimes these things are a little bit hard to enforce, a little bit vague. For example, if you're going to have a curfew, you know, what age? That caller suggested 16. Some might say 18. Some might say younger kids, maybe before they were teenagers, could be out and about on their own. I don't know. It's kind of an arbitrary thing. Just like a dress code, right? Have you been following? Dress codes always pop up in the news every so often. The latest one, as I understand, and I must tell you I haven't done a great deal of research on this, but the latest one has to do with women having bare shoulders. Apparently, one of the newer fashion trends, and I certainly don't follow this, but one of the new fashion trends for women, especially younger women, is either tops or dresses that have cut-out shoulders. Okay? I don't know how else to describe it. It's probably a fashion term for it. Or what they call racing back tops, which are used, I think, by swimmers for freedom of movement. And there are people that are suggesting there's a right place for this and a wrong place. Even in some houses of government, there are rules being promulgated that say you have to dress in a certain way. You can't be too, in the olden days, they used to say you can't be too immodest. But how do you police that? How do you, what kind of rules do you set up for that, for goodness sakes? You know, what some people might think of as immodest, other people might say, oh, what's wrong with this? And then, of course, there's the whole question of, does this only apply to women? You know, I have seen some guys, by the way, our phone number is 283-2525. I want to share your thoughts on this, 283-2525. I have seen some guys wearing, and I don't know what, muscle shirts? I don't want to call it. You know what I'm talking about? A tank top. It's like a T-shirt with half of it missing. Okay, you know what I'm talking about? I have seen some guys wearing these things out and about in public, and it's about the closest thing to obscene that you can imagine. It's grotesque. It's gross, quite frankly. I see some of these guys, and I think, what can they be thinking when they put that outfit on and stepped outside in the public? What, are they nuts? So I would certainly not think that it applies just to women. There was an article on this, by the way, in the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. Let's see, when was this? A couple of Sundays ago. This past Sunday. By a woman, the writer was Sarah Bocknett. And, she talked about this. She said, who's to say what's appropriate attire? She titled her article, The Right to Bear Arms, which was a great play on words. Of course, it's not B-E-A-R, bear arms, as in weapons. It's the right to bear, B-A-R-E, arms, the right to bear your arms. So I didn't realize that this was such a big deal. But apparently there have been stories about it. Members of the U.S. Congress have been told, this is just within the past month, That's right. The U.S. Congress, the House and the Senate in Washington, D.C. They have all gotten a memo that said, to quote, members should wear appropriate business attire. Which, according to Sarah Bachnet, for women, that apparently means no sleeveless dresses or tops. And it means for men, you got to wear a necktie. Got to wear a necktie. And then she went on to point towards some rather public figures who have been wearing, I guess sleeveless dresses is the appropriate terminology. I don't know. I'm not much of an expert on women's fashions. Sleeveless dresses. She says, first daughter Ivanka Trump wears them all the time. She cited journalist Megyn Kelly, worked for many years for Fox, now works for NBC News. She's been called out for an off-the-shoulder cocktail dress that she was wearing at an event with Russian President Vladimir Putin. So maybe it is just discriminating against women. I don't know. But again, one person's inappropriate dress might be another person's fine. What's wrong with this? What are you talking about? I suppose it's like trying to define pornography. There was a member of Congress a long time ago, back when this was being debated in Washington, and they were talking for days about just how to phrase this law and, you know, how to define the pornography. And finally, this one guy stands up and says, well, I might not be able to define it, but when I see it, I know what it is. Maybe that's that way with appropriate dress as well. And I've seen inappropriate dress, not just for women, by the way, as I said. Some men should be forbidden by law to wear those tank top things. They look like they're from outer space. 283-2525 is the number. It's Open Talk, 283-2525. Now, if you're an adult and you want to do this, what the heck? You know, people might laugh at you. I would. Or even try to shame you, I guess. But so what? But what about students? What about dress at school? I say school administrators ought to crack down. I've seen some kids going to and from school that are dressed very inappropriately, shockingly inappropriately, and apparently it's allowed, I guess. I don't know. Why not a dress code at school? I've always thought if you were dressed appropriately, you tended to behave appropriately. Now, that might not be 100% correct, but it's pretty good advice, I think. If you're dressed appropriately, you tend to behave appropriately. I think there ought to be a dress code in schools. I see nothing wrong with that whatsoever. And if you want to mandate that members of Congress, men, have to wear neckties, fine with me. 283-2525 is the number. It's Open Talk, 283-2525. There are others in this day and age that would say, get out of my life. What are you talking about? 283-2525, our number, Open Talk on the program today. Hey, it's a big night in Saxonburg. Saxonburg Fireman's Parade tonight. Always one of the big nights of the week during Carnival Week, as thousands of people pour into Saxonburg for the parade. Starts tonight at 6 o'clock, by the way, in case you're wondering. And it usually lasts for at least a couple of hours. Sometimes even a little longer than that. I mean, it doesn't go on until midnight, but it's a long parade. The biggest one around here for years and years and years. And by the way, if you're going, you need to head into Saxonburg a little early. You don't have to go now, but make sure you arrive early. Dave Felsing was with us. It was last week, I think, Dave was here. And they've started for several years now having shuttle buses from Knock High School, which is on the outskirts of town. And, of course, they have huge parking lots there. So that's really the thing to do, you know. I'll go park at Knock High School and hop on a shuttle bus, and I'll bring you downtown for the parade, and I'll take you back afterwards. 283-2525 is our number, 283-2525. Speaking of Saxonburg, boy, what a series of highs and lows they've had over the past week. In fact, it was exactly a week ago when we got the first word that officials were digging up remains. They had unearthed remains of a body in the backyard of a house in Massachusetts, and the remains might be those of Donald Eugene Webb. Yeah, that was last Thursday. And then later in the day, forensic testing proved that indeed it was the remains of Donald Webb, and we had that story for you last Friday. His wife buried him in the backyard. His wife Lillian is now, well, up into her 80s. He died in 1997, according to the FBI, 20 years ago. So for 20 years, she kept this secret that her husband wanted for the murder of Saxonburg Police Chief Gregory Adams was buried in her backyard. And she had helped to keep him hidden in secret rooms in two different houses in Massachusetts town. Houses that had secret rooms with fake doors coming out of a closet where the guy lived. And that would be, well, former police chief Greg Adams was murdered in early December of 1980. Webb died in 1997. 17 years. He was on the run, and she helped to hide him. Maybe other members of the family, or at least one son. We don't know how this is going to shake down today. I understand that there was a news conference this morning, late this morning in Saxonburg, and our news director, Kayla Molzan, was there. I haven't had a chance to talk to her. I did see that she had arrived back here at the station, so I'll be anxious to hear if there was anything new that came out at that news conference late this morning. There have been some people wondering about the deal that gave Donald Eugene Webb's wife, Lillian, immunity from prosecution in exchange for her telling the authorities where he was buried. I don't know. I would be the I would never question if that's what if the family agreed to that. You know, if the widow of Greg Adams, and she did, agree to that, I would be the last one to ever argue. That would be her call, as far as I'm concerned. And the authorities agreed with it, too. They wanted to finally put this case to rest, you know. Number one, know that they'd found the guy, and number two, know that he was dead. But I would be the last one to ever question. I know I've heard people discussing it, and, you know, should she be prosecuted? And I would let that final call be up to Marianne Jones. She has since remarried long ago. And, you know, if she was agreeable to that, then I say, okay. This woman, the ex-wife, is not going to live that much longer anyway. She's well up in her 80s now. But what a sad, sad thing. So sad. And it all came up again just as Saxonburg was getting ready to celebrate its 185th birthday. Had a big celebration last weekend, last Saturday. Wonderful celebration. And as I understand, they had a moment of silence during the day in memory of their slain police chief. A nice touch. Well done. 283-2525 is our number. It's Open Talk. Hi, caller. This is Dave Malarkey. Go right ahead. It's your turn. Hello? Anybody there? Sounds like we've reached Venus or something, doesn't it? Hello? Is there anybody on the line? No, I guess not. 283, that was very strange. Like a call from a UFO or something, huh? just a strange beeping. Well, I heard this strange beeping. I don't know what it was. It was like saucer-shaped or a big cigar, and it flew right over on top of me. And it was beeping. 283-2525 is our number. Let's go to this line. Hi, caller. This is Dave. Go right ahead. It's your turn.
Hello, Dave. Can you hear me?
I can. Yes. Go right ahead.
Okay. Hey, quick question. Did I hear you say a month or two back that you had an Amazon Alexa?
No, I do not. We were talking about them, but I don't have one.
No. Okay.
Do you have one?
Yeah, I have one. I was just wondering how I could listen to your radio station through one.
That's interesting. I don't know. You can listen to us on a computer if you have a PC or a laptop. That's easily done. Whether that transfers to an Alexa or not, I don't know. I do know that on some tablets, this would be like an iPad or something like that, they don't have all the capabilities that a full laptop does. So it may be that you can't get it to one of those things.
Well, I listen to you guys through the app on my iPhone.
Mm-hmm, yes.
So I use that, but, you can get radio stations through iHeartRadio and TuneIn Radio, but I didn't know if your station was affiliated with any of those.
We stream. I can't tell you for sure whether we're affiliated with any of those. Do you have an internet radio, or are you just listening through your device there?
Yeah, like on my phone, I would just open the WISR app and hit play.
Yeah.
But with like an Alexa or Echo, you can pretty much tell her to, Alexa, I want to hear WISR radio, and it just starts playing. But I can't do that with you guys for whatever reason. It won't come up with yours. So I didn't know if there was somebody else out there that knew how to do that through her.
I
shouldn't even call it a her, but I'm so used to
it. I hear what you mean. I'll check with our engineering department because that's not in my bailiwick, so I can't tell you. I know that you can stream our signal on a laptop or a PC or a phone, but I don't know about those particular devices.
It's a really amazing piece of equipment. It's one of the neatest things that... if you've had a chance to be around one, it's pretty cool.
Well, I learned my lesson because actually when it came up here on the program, we were talking about it, I kind of poo-pooed the things. But then I was set on the right path by several callers. In fact, we had a number of callers who had a disability, and they said it was the greatest thing in the world for them. Because for one reason or another, a physical disability, or whatever, they couldn't get up and around a lot, and they said they were the greatest things in the world. Had one individual call who was visually impaired. He said it was fantastic. So certainly set me straight,
I really enjoy it, and as far as little kids interacting with it, in their world, they don't know not to interact with a piece of equipment like that.
Mm-hmm. Well, what I did, and I'll admit I was poking fun whenever we brought the subject up. I said, why? Because it's advertised on TV, you could tell it to turn on the lights and so on and so forth in your home. And I said, what? For goodness sakes, get up out of your chair and flip a light switch. What do you need a device for? But then several callers called me and said, hey, you better know what you're talking about before you start spouting off. So they put me in my place, and rightly so.
Okay. I use it every day. I mean, you just walk into a room and you can say, Alexa, what's the top news stories of the day, or what's the weather, and you can just go about your business. And now they're starting it where you can actually interact with it a lot more. It'll actually ask you how your day was, and it's amazing what technology. Every day they just come up with something new. But I'd love to be able to walk in and just say, hey, Alexa, turn on WISR, and I could start streaming your station, but I haven't figured out how to do that yet.
Let me ask before I let you go, because there are several different companies now that have these devices. Yours is an Alexa?
Alexa, yeah. Amazon Alexa or Echo. Echo. It's either name is the same piece. You just pick whatever you want to call her.
Oh, I see.
Or it, I should say.
I could name mine after an old girlfriend or something, maybe, huh?
No, it's one of the two. You just have to.
Oh, one of the two.
Yeah, it'll answer to Echo or Alexa.
Well, I never dated
a female's voice.
Yeah. I never dated either an Alexa or an Echo, so I'd be lost on that.
It's the equivalent to Siri that's on an Apple iPhone.
Yes. Oh, I've talked to Siri for years. I know her very well. Thanks, my friend. Thanks.
All right. Take care. Bye.
Sure. Bye-bye. We have reached the end of our open line portion of the program today, but there's lots more to come, so please stick around. We are going to talk coming up on the program next with Holly Muchnock, who has all the information that you'll ever want to know about the regatta at Lake Arthur, which is just around the corner, coming up soon. So stick around, we'll take a quick break, and we'll be back to talk to Holly next here on the It's Your Turn program on WISR. We will be right back.
Hop the bus, leave the driving up to us.
The bus.
We're going your way, getting there stops here. Just hop the bus, easy and economical. Just hop the bus. No car, no problem. The bus will get you there. 'Cause that's what we do. Hop the bus. Leave the driving up to us.
The bus.
We're going your way.
Welcome back, listeners. Well, as promised, Holly Muchnock is with us to give us the lowdown on the regatta at Lake Arthur for this coming year. Holly, nice to talk to you again. Thanks for being with us today.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
All of a sudden, the regatta is just around the corner. What are the dates this year?
Yeah, so it's, as always, the first weekend of August. We are going to be Saturday and Sunday, August 5th and 6th.
Mm-hmm. Are you the overall coordinator, or do you work in public relations for the regatta? Holly, what's the deal on that?
So, yeah, so we are the event planning team that comes alongside the regatta.
Mm-hmm.
My company is East Wing Events, but for purposes of the regatta, we, we're kind of behind-the-scenes administrative and development team, and just have loved the last, this is our fourth year now, working with Butler County Tourism and the board of the regatta at Lake Arthur, and just love it.
The regatta has become a very popular, it's a tradition now, here in our area, and I was speculating earlier on the program when I told our listeners that you were going to be with us how long the regatta's been around. I'm guessing it must be close to 15, 20 years now. Do you happen to know? I know it was before you guys were involved with it.
Correct. Well, you're right on. We are celebrating our 19th year, which is exciting in and of itself, but most exciting that next year we get to celebrate our 20th. Which feels like a real special mark in time. So we're gearing up now with several new signature events that we're really excited about, all in preparation for what we expect to be a banner 20th year in 2018. But for this year, adding a few new exciting things to the mix.
Well, next year we'll have to bake a big cake, that's for sure. 20th
anniversary.
Please
do. You come and help us blow out the candle.
So are there any new events or anything that's been tweaked for this year's regatta, Holly?
Yes. Well, certainly every year we sort of tweak the things that are working. We know that the community loves some of the traditions that have been a part of the regatta for years. So the sailing races and the car cruise have happened, for the most part, year after year. Over the last several years, we've incorporated things like summer school, which is that opportunity for the community to come out and learn an activity for free with about 10 different organizations that partner with us to teach everything from stand-up paddleboarding to kayak. We even have some things on the land this year, like the Three Rivers Rowing Association, for instance, is going to do on-land rowing races. But instead of being on the water, you know, rowers a lot of time will off-season train on ergometers. So it's a machine that will do rowing races, but on land. So we're trying to give some fun little new options this year, and then bring back, or for the first time, try some new ones, like catamaran this year will be a fun new activity. And that's all at the summer school tent. It is free. There are already online sign-ups. We're going to go ahead and populate each lesson at 50% so that people can know that they're scheduled for something, but then leave some opportunities for folks to register on event days.
Well, that's
so they
a great
can come
idea.
Down.
Yeah.
Yeah, so they'll come down to the water, visit the summer school tent, and we'll be able to tell them what's available for even event day sign-up. So that's a fun thing. Our Lake Arthur Lily Pad, which is the tent for children, you know, really about 10 and under. We'll have all sorts of crafts and activities, including Home Depot, which does kind of a building craft. So we'll be doing, I think this year it's sailboats and birdhouses. And but again, everything that we're doing is intended to give you a sense of what can happen at the park. You know, how do we celebrate Marine State Park and all that it is, and at the same time, teach them something that will encourage them to come back again and, you know, bring their families, bring their friends.
Obviously, the regatta at Lake Arthur is at Marine State Park at Lake Arthur. However, there's a North Shore and a South Shore, and are quite far apart, as a matter of fact. Where are the regatta activities going to be this year, Holly?
Sure. So we are Pleasant Valley, so basically that's the South Shore.
Mm-hmm.
And most of all of the events and activities will take place in that space, including, actually this year, one of our features is the Dock Dogs Canine Aquatic Competition. Have you ever heard of that?
We have. As a matter of fact, I think next week I'm going to be doing a little interview with some of those people that are involved with that, because
fantastic.
It's pretty amazing. Yeah,
it is. It is. We're really excited to be bringing it to the park. Actually, last year we did sort of a demonstration and had hundreds of people out just to kind of watch the dogs jump into the lake.
Mm-hmm.
This year it's a little more structured, and so we actually have the National Dock Dogs folks coming out. They're actually installing a temporary pool on the South Shore for us. It's like a 40-foot by 20-foot pool that the dogs will actually run and jump into. And so whether you've got a dog who has actively competed in these types of things before, or you're someone who just has a dog that likes activity and adventure, you can go ahead and register to bring your best friend there and participate, whether, you know, brand new, novice, or experienced jumper.
Will that be, by the way, both days, or is that just a one-day thing?
That's actually both days, and there are multiple events that will be taking place over the course of each day.
Mm-hmm.
So that will be a big deal, and we think a big draw this year.
We're talking, listeners, with Holly Muchnock, event planner for the regatta at Lake Arthur, which is just around the corner, always the first weekend in August. And this year that makes it Saturday, August 5th, and Sunday, August 6th. So it is indeed just around the corner. In past years, the schedule has been pretty much all day, with some activities even very early in the morning. Is that going to be the case again this year, Holly?
Yeah, this year, for the most part, we're starting about 10 a.m. each day. Activities will go from Saturday all day long up until about 10 o'clock at night. In addition to some of the activities and events we've already talked about, we do have two full days of packed-out concerts. So free concerts both days, sort of at the Point, if you're familiar with the South Shore. It sort of turns into its own natural amphitheater with all that grassy space. We'll plant a mobile stage, and all through the day and into the evening have free concerts both days, also including our Battle of the Bands winners. So we actually had a wonderful competition this year and picked two, you know, local bands.
Mm-hmm.
One is Brother from Another Mother, and the Sunday winner was Soul Merchants. So we're excited to add those to the concert schedule this year. And one of the big things, actually, that, you know, every year we talk about what works, what doesn't. And we had actually taken away fireworks last year to do this laser show. And that was a thing that we heard from folks after the event, that they really, really loved the tradition of fireworks. And so we were thrilled that Deal Toyota stepped up to the plate this year and sponsored fireworks. So we're going to have those again this summer.
And what night will those be, Holly?
So fireworks will be Saturday evening. We say around dusk, which we estimate to be around 9 p.m.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want to come and watch fireworks and see the reflection off the lake, whether you have a boat or just want to come sit on the shoreline, we welcome the community to do that.
Is there an admission charge to get into the regatta at Lake Arthur?
No, sir. The park is a free resource to all of our communities, and we want to make sure that no one ever feels pressured to give. So we do raise sponsorship throughout the year, but for guests that are coming in, they have no stop of traffic, no collection of funding that day. They just come and play. We just want you to come out, have a great time, do as much as you can for free. And if you want to support the event, certainly, you know, you can do that separately. But the only thing really to pay for once you're at the regatta is if you choose to enjoy, you know, food or crafts. We've got a marketplace of vendors that includes both business and crafters and food trucks and vendors. Mm-hmm. So certainly if you want to spend a little money on those types of things, they're available. But it is just as easy to have a completely free day with your family on the South Shore at Moraine.
I'm looking at some information, a couple of sheets that I got online, and it appears to be a brochure of some sort. Is that something that will be available to people, or do they need to get this online?
That's a great question, Dave, and all of the above. So we did print quite a few early publications of our, at the time, tentative schedule. Mm-hmm. They are available really at any of the locations that Butler County Tourism supplies rack cards. So you can get them at the park, you can get them at the tourism office and a lot of businesses around the community. You can certainly visit our website, lakearthurregatta.org. There's a copy of it there, and we will hand them out at the information booth, which will be on site during the regatta. So if you don't see it otherwise, it'll also be published in the Butler Eagle the week before. So we'll have it everywhere we can get it.
That's good. I'm looking at, because you have a nice map in here, kind of outlining where things are, and it's very easy to see. Folks, if you start, I think most of our listeners are familiar with the South Shore. You go in off of 422 there, and, you know, when you come to the office, you keep going straight.
Yep, and that'll, just past the park office.
Take you right down to, you kind of wind through the woods for a little bit, and then you kind of straighten out, and you come to this flat area, that's Pleasant Valley area, and that's where everything is going to be. And I like your description of the main stage being kind of out by the point, because if you just keep going up there, there's lots of parking places, there's swimming beaches and all that kind of stuff. But then as you go out to the end of that, then the road kind of circles around to the left, and that is kind of a point sticking out into the lake. And that's where the main stage for the entertainment will be. And that's where the car cruise is going to be too, I guess, huh?
Yeah, the car cruise will be at that Point Picnic area. So it sort of hovers above where the stage will be. So if anybody is coming out, it's kind of an ideal place to plant a chair. You can be a part of all those things that are happening, and it's easy access. We know some of our guests come out and are, you know, wondering, you know, what about if I, you know, what are the handy accessible options? And so mm-hmm. for folks that are in wheelchairs, you know, we do have some special parking for them. We try to make everything as user-friendly as possible so that they can get to nearly all of the areas of the regatta without any trouble and have a place to view. And we've also brought some ADA-compliant porta-potties, you know, just in case. So we have, you know, we've tried to do the best we can to think about all those folks that may be coming out.
You have a spot on the map that's designated as the Summer's Cool Tent. Well, that's kind of intriguing. I have to ask you what that is, Holly, the Summer's Cool Tent.
Yeah, so the Summer's Cool Tent is down there right on the water's edge, and that's where we put all those special partners that are teaching the eco instruction that we talked about a little earlier.
Oh, I get it. It's summer school, but
summer
it looks
cool.
But it's spelled well. You can see what faked me out. It's a capital C O O L. I thought maybe you know that's like ice water baths in there or something like that.
Well, yeah, it's interesting because in that area, you know, all of those activities are taking place, but it's also the area that will tell folks, you know, if you want to go on a a boat ride. Marine Preservation Fund is bringing out Nautical Nature again, and they're going to be giving these wonderful hour-long tours of the lake, so that's an option. All the access to, you know, the sailboats, the catamarans, all that will take place down at the water's edge. And there's also a stand-up paddleboard competition. Again, this will be the fourth year for that. Ian Smith from Surf Stop Adventures is running that contest, and again, it's just there's so much to do, and we are just thrilled each and every year to see how many different organizations and community partners want to be a part of this. At this point, we've got nearly 100 different community partners who have said, you know, we want to be a part of what you're doing and support the park and teach people. And it is a wonderful partnership of you have organizations year in and year out.
I didn't realize that the Nautical Nature could sail from that part of the park because they're traditional launch point is up on the North Shore, so they have a facility there where you can board and launch on the Nautical Nature cruises there?
Yeah, there's a water dock that the park has placed for the South Shore in that space, mm-hmm. and so it's used exclusively for this purpose, which makes getting, you know, on and off the boat, obviously, a possibility. And, again, we're thrilled that, you know, even if you want to do something short-term, you know, a half-hour instructional thing, great. But if you want to go and just cruise the water with your family, what a wonderful opportunity to get out, you know, at the park. Also, for what it is worth, I was out there a few weeks ago with my team just to, again, do a walkthrough.
Yeah.
And one of the things we realized we hadn't done in a while was to go over to Crescent Bay, which is, you know, just around the corner, and they have rental boats. So if for some reason you wanted to come out and enjoy the park a little more thoroughly, you know, that Crescent Bay rental area has kayaks and canoes, but they also have these catamarans. My team and I took out one of the brand new catamarans. It's, you know, reasonably priced. They are easy to use, and we just had a blast. So, you know, we're still exploring the park, and we've been up there for several years now.
You describe getting around in the park only just like I do. Just go around the corner there, and that's at Crescent Bay. Yeah. There's no better way to describe that. That's where it is.
I find that, you know, Moraine is one of those underutilized. It's under-celebrated, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
What the park is, what the state has given us with this wonderful resource, and what the park management team and rangers do to enhance that space. I mean, it's just wonderful. I feel like I need to tell everybody what a great park Moraine is. And, you know, you don't find it by accident typically. You kind of have to have a destination and know you're heading there. But man, once you find it, you know, it really does kind of open your eyes.
Does this event draw from the entire region, even, I would imagine, some folks from the tri-state area, huh?
Oh, absolutely. We know that we get guests not only from Pittsburgh, but from western Pennsylvania. We've had folks that have called us wanting to get, you know, specifics on, you know, when can we start registering for summer school? And those folks are coming from Ohio, West Virginia, even Michigan. I've got folks that are planning their summer family vacations around our regatta dates, and that makes us feel fantastic.
Absolutely. I talked some months ago here on the program, I guess it must be about 6 months ago now, come to think of it, with a couple of guests from the Western Pennsylvania Conservancy about the founding of Moraine State Park and Lake Arthur. And it's such a marvelous story. You know, there used to be a glacial lake there, and after the Ice Age, and the founders of Moraine State Park actually recreated that lake by, you know, building the dam on Muddy Creek there and then filling it up, and voila, there it is again.
Yeah, I don't know that a lot of people realize it's a man-made lake and really all that went into it. You're 100% right. That backstory is fascinating. There's actually a book that was recently published by Polly Shaw. I don't know if you're familiar with this, but it's a woman that was commissioned to write the story of Moraine. It's only been published here this past spring, and she's actually going to be one of our guest presenters. So, you know, in between the Live at Lake Arthur, all of our concert performances, we have downtime when, you know, the bands are transitioning, and so we've tried to strategically use that time, you know, those 15 or 20 minutes between band sets, to bring out community members and people that are doing, you know, such exciting things around the region. And Polly Shaw is one of those special guest speakers that will come, and she's going to talk a little bit about the story of Moraine. We're thrilled to include her.
Well, you'll be thrilled. I know her. In fact, we had her on the program as well, and she is she spent a whole lot of time researching that book, I want to tell you. So it's a labor of love, and she's a treasure trove of information. Let's talk about some of the events on the water, Holly Muchnock. If you're just joining us, folks, it's your turn here on a Thursday. And we're chatting with Holly Muchnock. She's the event director for the upcoming regatta at Lake Arthur, first weekend in August. Number one, will there be a boat parade this year? That has been a popular event in some of the years gone by.
Yes, boat parade and some other races, bridge-to-bridge race. Capsize and recovery, which is more of a demonstration of how to, you know, use boat safety on the water. And then beyond those races that the community is involved in, I think I mentioned also the stand-up paddleboard competition, which is a Pennsylvania race, our fourth annual this particular season, and then a host of other water activities.
Will there be sailboat races this year, Holly?
Yes. Yeah, and actually, if you are someone interested in the schedule of, you know, what's happening and when and the specifics of all of that,
I'd certainly encourage you to visit our website. The LakeArthurRegatta.org site has a complete schedule of all of those races, what's happening when, and how you can get the best vantage point.
I don't know a whole lot about sailboat racing. I've watched some of the America's Cup racing. That's on ESPN nowadays when it's on, but that's
a little different.
Yeah,
a little different
that's
here.
A little bit different. Yeah. First of all, it's many times in New Zealand and Australia, but to me, it's just beautiful to be able to sit or stand on shore and watch sailboats on Lake Arthur. There is something very, very peaceful and resting about it. You know what I mean?
Yes, agreed, agreed. We love the pace of this event. You know, there are certainly plenty of things to choose to do on your weekend over the summer. But getting up there and being a part of this event, which over the last few years has welcomed between 15 and 20,000 guests over the whole of the weekend. You know, when you get there, you never feel overwhelmed or that frenetic kind of chaos that you feel sometimes at these larger events. And I think mostly because it's spread out over, this beautiful space. And the pace of it is wonderful, but it's also serene, like you mentioned. It's sort of a nice, easy pace about the program. And, it feels like if somebody wants to engage, they engage. If somebody wants to sit on the beach on the South Shore, they certainly can do that. And if they want to get a little more active, they picked one of the activities, but it's certainly easy just to come and chill out for a few hours.
Or you could go up to one of my favorite spots at Moraine, because I go out there quite a bit for R&R, rest and relaxation. There is a smaller, it's not tiny, but it's a smaller picnic area that sits above the whole Pleasant Valley area, and you can kind of be up there enjoying your hot dog and just kind of looking down on it all, you know?
Yeah.
Very nice. Will there be activities for kids? Now, other than, obviously, you can go swimming and run around and have a good time, but will there be any special activities designed especially for the youngsters?
Yeah, so the tent that we've kind of designated as our children's tent, we call it the Lake Arthur Lily Pad, and it's geared toward those guests that are about 10 years of age or younger, and we have several different partners that come, and there are crafts, there are little rides, like barrel train rides. You can learn to do a couple different things, but yes, that Lake Arthur Lily Pad is a tent that families with younger children will want to come visit.
What about, I see as I look at your brochure here, the marketplace of vendors. What are we talking about? What kind of vendors are going to be there, Holly?
Sure. So a little bit of everything. We definitely have our fair share of crafters, you know, folks that make something special, a couple clothiers, a couple businesses, even some nonprofits that will come and showcase what they're doing. But there's also a whole tier of our marketplace that is geared toward the food. So, you know, if you want to come out and this is your time of year to get a funnel cake or a smoothie or some wonderful gelato, there are about, I want to say about 18 food vendors and then another 18 or 20 other folks that are vending or giving good information about what they do in our communities.
Mm-hmm. We're talking about the regatta at Lake Arthur coming up. It's a couple of weekends down the road, the first weekend in August, traditional dates. It's 2 days, Saturday and Sunday. Saturday goes late because it wraps up with the fireworks display presented by Deal Automotive Toyota. And as Holly said, that's just as it gets dark enough for the fireworks to really be shown. And folks, you get a double, if you've never been out to Lake Arthur for the fireworks, you get a double dose, because you can watch them up in the sky, and Holly, you can also watch them reflected in the water. It's pretty neat.
It is. It is. It's a special way to celebrate the end of the first day, and we're thrilled to be able to brought back fireworks this year, thanks to Deal. Also on Sunday, when we wrap up the whole of the event, we have another fun kind of finale send-off, and that's with a native butterfly release. And so folks have the opportunity to participate in a mass launch where we have a special box and release about 250 monarchs into the sky as our farewell.
And then for folks that are interested, there's also an opportunity to purchase an individual butterfly. It's from a woman who owns a butterfly farm in the area, and we organize it through her. She's also one of our speakers. And then, folks will pick up the butterfly that they've purchased and release it gently into the sky, again, about 6 o'clock on Sunday when we have our farewell. So just a wonderful celebration. It's one of the things that we love to do, also to give back to the park, even in small ways, like helping to, replenish the butterfly population. There's a lot of good things that butterflies do for a park setting, and to see milkweed increasing and the butterflies repopulating is an important thing.
Lots of stuff to do, folks, whether you just want to go out and take it easy for a day or two. You could go both days if you wanted. Or maybe you want to kind of meander among the cars at the car cruise. They'll be set up both days as well. Maybe you'd like to play a little volleyball on sand. Have you ever had an opportunity to do that? Let me give you personal testimony. It's a heck of a lot of fun. And there'll be pickup volleyball, sand volleyball, right on the beach, too. I might have to take advantage of that, Holly. I love to do that.
Yeah.
Well, you never have to worry about falling down,
That's right.
Injury-free. The regatta at Lake Arth. Oh, by the way, something else we should mention. There's tons of parking in the Pleasant Valley area on the South Shore. So don't worry about having to walk 5 miles, because there's a lot of people that will fit into that area. But it's flat, it's pretty, in terms of parking, it's pretty compact, so no
problem. And it's free, free parking. The rangers will be there to help direct traffic appropriately, and it's just a great relationship we have with the park that they've had, not only the ability and willingness to let us come and take over the South Shore every weekend, in August, that first weekend of August every year. But they're such a help. I mean, they really are a partner to us. What the park staff and rangers have done to not just let us host the event there, but to be a part of it, really speaks volumes to who they are and what they're doing, what they're passionate about.
Saturday, August 5th, 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. Sunday, August 6th, 10 a.m. to 6 at Moraine State Park, of course, the regatta at Lake Arthur. You mentioned, Holly, as we close up here, the web address for people who want to get even more details. We've kind of skipped over some stuff here in the interest of time, but the detailed schedule of events at your website, correct?
Yes, that's lakearthurregatta.org. And certainly all of the information is there about our concert schedules and our activity schedules, but also additional information about our vendors, what's happening when, and how you can get signed up for, those eco-instruction activities at summer school.
Holly Muchnock is the event director. Thanks, Holly. Good to talk with you again. I'll look forward to next year when we'll have the big birthday cake.
Thanks so much, Dave. I appreciate it.
Okay. So long now.
Enjoy your day.
Yeah, you too. Holly Muchnock, event director for the regatta. We have more to come on It's Your Turn today. A very topical subject coming up, immigration law. In the news, since the inauguration of President Donald Trump, very much in the news, in the courts even. So we'll talk about that. I don't know anything about it. I mean, I talk for 30 seconds, I suppose, but in terms of the details of immigration law and deportation and all that kind of thing, we'll have a guest who knows all about it. Her name is Shoba Wadia, and we'll be talking with her coming up on the It's Your Turn program in just a couple of minutes. Stick around. We will be right back. Hey, folks, have you heard about Going Postal Butler, your friendly neighborhood shipping center? Yeah, they're located just off Newcastle Road, Shockey Lane, right behind King's and Villa Grande. Going Postal Butler. They package your items for shipping. And that takes care of a situation that sometimes can be a real bother. You got to get the wrapping paper, the string, the tape, whatever you need. They'll do it for you. And you can ship any way you want to, FedEx, UPS, U.S. Postal Service. They will package your items for shipping at Going Postal Butler. Other services they offer, copying, scanning, faxing, mailbox rentals, custom boxes. They have an official notary, also greeting cards, even a lottery agent. Going Postal Butler, 140 Shockey Lane, That's just off Newcastle Road, right behind King's and Villa Grande restaurants. It's in the Shockey Mini Storage area. For more information, give them a call, 724-841-0044. Golan Postal Butler, your friendly neighborhood shipping center. Going to be chatting listeners, by the way, if you're just joining us here on the It's Your Turn program here on WISR today, that's fine. My name is Dave Malarkey. We're going to be talking about immigration law on the next segment of the program, and we have an excellent resource person to discuss that topic with. She joins us by telephone today. Shoba Wadia is the Samuel Weiss Faculty Scholar and Director for the Center of Immigrants' Rights at Penn State Law at University Park. Shoba Wadia, nice to meet you. Nice to have you with us for a few minutes here today.
Thank you for having me. It's an honor to be here.
And by the way, it is Penn State University Law now, right? They've recently changed the name?
Correct.
Yeah, well, nice to talk with you today. This subject has been in the news quite a bit since the inauguration of President Donald Trump. He has had a couple of different forms of a travel ban that he has promulgated, and they have been adjusted by the courts here and there. So it's quite timely, I guess, that we talk about this here today, right?
Absolutely. It's at the forefront. Immigration has always been a compelling issue in the discourse, and it has certainly received airtime since the inauguration.
Well, your book on this subject, which is entitled, by the way, Beyond Deportation, The Role of Prosecutorial Discretion in Immigration Cases, your book was actually published last fall, and I'm assuming that you wrote it over a period of maybe even a couple of years before that. So this is before the Trump era, right?
Correct. In fact, even before the Obama era, I've been studying this concept of discretion in immigration law, which really refers to the choice that an agency, in this case the Department of Homeland Security, makes about whether to enforce the full scope of immigration law against the person.
Mm-hmm. Did you ever imagine that we would be where we are today? With the travel plan and obviously several challenges to it already. And I think the latest is the Supreme Court is allowing partial implementation even later this week. Am I correct on that date?
Correct. So there, I would not have imagined it. And in addition to the topic of this book, which is specific to discretion, the other theme that I write on is around immigration and national security. So the debates and discourse around the travel ban is also close to me. So on June 29th, that was the implementation date for the partial reinstatement that the Supreme Court made on June 26th. And there is already a flurry of paper at the various levels of court, and including at the Supreme Court, where the administration has asked the court to hear the challenges that have been made at the lower courts. Mm-hmm. So we'll have to wait and see. There have already been some adjustments, as you suggested, based on what the Hawaii District Court has ruled since June 26th.
So tell me a little bit about, and for those of us who are not all that familiar with the inner workings of appellate courts, particularly the Supreme Court, I mean, there are many cases that take years before they come before the Supreme Court or before the Supreme Court deigns to hear them. Isn't this a little bit unusual that it was taken up so quickly?
You know, yes and no. So we have this federal court structure. Most of the so-called lowest courts are called district courts. And then if you want to appeal a decision by the district court, you might appeal to the appellate court. So for the Hawaii court, that would be the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals.
Mm-hmm.
And the U.S. Supreme Court, if somebody wants the U.S. Supreme Court to hear a case, they will file a piece of paper called a petition for certiorari. And the Supreme Court receives thousands of these petitions every year, but only chooses and decides to issue or grant a few of them. So what the U.S. Supreme Court has said on this travel ban case is that it will hear whether or not it's legal and the merits of the case next fall during the October term. So that's one decision that the U.S. Supreme Court made. And we thought that there was good reason to believe that the Supreme Court would hear it because of the case and controversy around the travel ban. The other thing the administration asked the Supreme Court to do was to lift a part of the injunction or freeze that was made by the lower courts, and that's where you see this so-called partial stay. So there has been a lot of movement. I think some people were surprised that the U.S. Supreme Court weighed in with this split, partial, bona fide relationship test that then was left at the behest of agencies to interpret. So what you hear a lot about in the space today is what constitutes a bona fide relationship. Because the U.S. Supreme Court has said any person who lacks a bona fide relationship to a person or entity is covered by the ban, this hits nationals from the six countries that were identified, as well as refugees who are not able to make this showing of a bona fide relationship.
Mm-hmm. So there are levels of appeals at the federal level, similar to what we have here in Pennsylvania. I mean, we have Commonwealth Court at the Common Pleas Court at the county level. We have Commonwealth Court. We have Superior Court. We have the State Supreme Court. So analogous to that, we have federal district courts and then circuit courts at the federal level and then the U.S. Supreme Court. Similar, I guess, right?
Correct. And, I mean, to complicate the question of courts even more, if we just look at immigration law, given the theme for today's segment, for the individual who is charged with being in violation of immigration law, for example, that person is going to receive a charge from a unit of the Department of Homeland Security called ICE, Immigration Customs Enforcement, and will go before a judge in immigration court. And our immigration court system is actually housed within the Department of Justice. So the judges themselves are employees of the Justice Department, which is a little bit different than how you might think of court on Law and Order, or as we were just discussing with regard to the travel ban.
Mm-hmm. So, and getting back to your book, again, the title, listeners, if you joined us a little bit late, the title of Shobha Wadia's book is Beyond Deportation, The Role of Prosecutorial Discretion in Immigration Cases. So would this be another, and I don't know whether my analogy is weak or not, Shobha, so help me out here. If there's a potential crime at the local level, the county district attorney will have the final say on whether or not he or she is going to prosecute. In some cases, they don't. In some cases, they think there's enough evidence to take it to trial. So there's something analogous to this within ICE. There are judges who decide there is prosecutorial discretion in these cases. They might go ahead with deportation proceedings in some cases, but not in others. Is that right?
Very close. So the analogy you made to the county attorney is an apt one. We have a very similar concept in other civil systems as well as the criminal justice system. One example I like to use is fishing without a license. We don't go after every single person who fishes without a license. Why? Because there are bigger fish to fry, pun intended. So there are limited resources that the government has. So choices have to be made about who to target for removal enforcement and who to place on the back burner. And so in the immigration space, the government has the resources to deport about 400,000 or less than 4% of the 11.2 million people living in the United States without authorization. And so that's one reason that prosecutorial discretion comes into play. You know, one clarification is that judges, in fact, and this is what's unique about prosecutorial discretion, judges do not make these choices. Rather, the individual acting as the prosecutor does. So in the criminal justice context, that might include a district attorney or ADA. In the immigration context, that might include somebody at the Department of Homeland Security, so someone at ICE, someone at CBP, which stands for Customs Border Protection, mm-hmm. and even people at USCIS, which stands for United States Citizenship and Immigration Services. All of these units of the Department of Homeland Security have the power of prosecutorial discretion.
Tell us a little bit about how you came to write this book. You have an extensive background in immigration law, do you?
Yes, so I've been in the immigration field for almost 20 years, and as a law student at Georgetown in the 90s, I fell in love with the field. Part of it was intellectual. The immigration code has been compared second in complexity to the U.S. tax code, and I really liked the statute, and so it was a great field for me in terms of the complication of the code as well as the human side of immigration law. I became really interested in prosecutorial discretion when I started working at a law firm in Washington, D.C., also in the late 90s, and I worked on a range of immigration cases, asylum and refugee law, employment, family, removal defense. And the most interesting cases I handled involved prosecutorial discretion. People and families who had no formal or durable release available under the law, but had these compelling circumstances, like long-term presence in the United States, having a U.S. citizen spouse or child, and so on. And so when I became an academic, I moved to Penn State almost 10 years ago to start the immigration clinic here at the law school and to teach immigration courses. The role of discretion was just a natural calling for me. And I spent several years afterwards researching and writing about this topic, and it eventually culminated into this book.
The title, listeners, is Beyond Deportation, the Role of Prosecutorial Discretion in Immigration Cases. We have a few more minutes that we're able to chat with Shobha Wadia, the author of this book, and we will do so after a quick break here. So stick around a few more minutes with her right after these words here on It's Your Turn on WISR. The folks at the Society of St. Vincent de Paul Food Bank are hoping for the best. They're hoping that their program to take donations of excess fresh vegetable produce from home gardens will be as big a success this summer as it has been over the past few years. And they've kicked it off. You know, we're far enough into the season now that a lot of backyard gardens are producing. Maybe not quite tomatoes yet, maybe for some, but lots of other of the early crops. And if you have any excess, for goodness sakes, we certainly would like you to consider donating it to the Society of St. Vincent de Paul Food Bank. They make it very easy to do so. They have a program where you can take your garden produce, your fresh produce, to the St. Michael the Archangel Parish Hall. It's right behind St. Michael's Church on the south side of Butler on Center Avenue. They have volunteers there every Saturday morning, and they're there from 8 a.m. until noon. You can drop off your fresh garden produce, and it will be distributed to the needy on Monday through the Society of St. Vincent de Paul Food Bank. They take it right there. This program, as we say, in the past several years has been really successful, and most gardeners have a little bit extra, right? I mean, you enjoy all of your the fruits of your labor in your backyard garden and, you know, distribute probably to neighbors and Aunt Ethel and Uncle Fred and everybody else, and there's still some left over, right? Especially when it all starts to come on at once. So make sure it doesn't go to waste. Think about donating to the Society of St. Vincent de Paul Food Cupboard. They make it very easy. They're there Saturday mornings, 8 a.m. until noon. St. Michael the Archangel Parish Hall, Center Avenue, south side of Butler, right behind St. Michael's Church. We stand tallest when we stoop to help others. The Society of St. Vincent de Paul.
That frightening sound is one we hear quite often throughout the day. Our heart quickens and immediately we wonder what happened. A medical emergency can be frightening. Every tick of the clock crucial. And that's why Butler Ambulance Service is dedicated to be there with every ounce of care possible. Butler Ambulance Service is within minutes of providing you or a loved one with treatment and transportation. Call 282-9595 to find out more. Butler Ambulance Service is a phone call away from serving you.
Welcome back. My name is Dave Malarkey. On this segment of It's Your Turn here on WISR, we're talking about immigration, specifically a book entitled Beyond Deportation, The Role of Prosecutorial Discretion in Immigration Cases. The author is Shobha Wadia. She is our guest visiting with us today from the main campus at Penn State at University Park. I don't want to talk too much inside baseball here because, quite frankly, most of us, myself, most of our listeners, we're not that familiar with the complexities of immigration law. But there's one example that many of our listeners will perhaps be familiar with and that you talk about in your book, and that has to do with the late John Lennon, the Beatles star who faced deportation from the United States. I can vaguely remember this back in the 1970s when the federal government wanted to deport John Lennon. You have a picture of him in your book, so you must talk about this and his attorney, right?
Absolutely, and his attorney, Leon Wildes, also wrote the foreword to my book and is still practicing immigration law in New York City. Indeed, the Lennon case is important if you like the Beatles, but also it's significant because his case triggered the very first publication of prosecutorial discretion in immigration. Lennon's attorney argued that there is this prosecutorial discretion program and that the government is keeping it from the public. And it was through a long foray of litigation that we ultimately received the government's first publication of something called deferred action, which is one type of discretion that says your case is not the most important case in the world of enforcement, plus you have compelling circumstances, so we're going to place it on the back burner, look the other way, and go after actual threats to national security. So you might say that the case is significant for even the public's understanding and attorneys' understanding of the fact that this concept does exist in immigration law. And since then, we've seen scores of cases that have been processed for and granted deferred action.
Well, this relates to what's going on today because I can recall off the top of my head at least a couple of stories where individuals have been taken into custody and deported. In one case I can think of, a breadwinner for a family deported and didn't seem to be any threat whatsoever. They'd been like in the United States for 20 years or something like that working and so on. So I guess this discretion very much figures into today's news, doesn't it?
Absolutely, and you raise a good point. There's a real concern. I myself am concerned about what the future of discretion looks like under this administration. After inauguration, President Trump signed several executive orders, and two relate to immigration enforcement. And if you read the language of those orders, you see that almost everyone could be seen as an enforcement priority. And it's important to have priorities. Congress has asked the executive branch to do so, and there are limited resources the government has to enforce the law. The problem with making every person an enforcement priority is haphazard enforcement, where we're placing at the very same level actual threats to national security and primary breadwinners that have lived in the United States for 20 years and are raising a family. Those are not the individuals that I believe should be the target of immigration enforcement. And fair prosecutorial discretion means that we look at individual equities and we make choices that are based on sound judgment and fairness.
Our time begins to run short. I want to ask a couple of questions that perhaps may be in the minds of our listeners. Can you tell us in brief form, what is a green card, and are green card holders vulnerable to deportation?
Sure. So green cards are not always green in color. The formal term is called a lawful permanent resident. And nearly a million people become lawful permanent residents or green card holders every year. You can acquire a green card not quickly through the mail, but rather through specified relationships that Congress has outlined in our immigration law, like a family relationship or a relationship to a U.S. employer. Having a green card is not foolproof. Though the individual enjoys durable status and a permanent one, lawful permanent residents or green card holders are vulnerable to immigration enforcement. So, for example, if you've had a green card for many years, you could be targeted for enforcement based on a past indiscretion or a crime that now makes you removable or deportable from the United States.
Can you give us some context? We hear this in the news. It pops up most recently every time there's been another judicial action on the travel ban. How many people are actually deported in the United States each year? Are there any average figures for that over the past several years?
So we've seen at the peak under the Obama administration more than 430,000 removals each year. Immigration removals happen each and every day, and under every administration, we've seen a healthy number. So we've seen anywhere in the last several years between 250 and 400,000+ deportations every year.
Do you think that figure might surprise a lot of listeners when they hear that during the Obama administration, as many as 450,000 people were deported each year?
I think so. You know, there are some who are aware and who are in the immigration space who might be aware of that number. But for those who are critical about former President Obama's policy around so-called Dreamers or in announcing the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals or DACA program, they may be surprised to learn that immigration enforcement was quite heavy-handed under his administration. The difference was that under the Obama administration, agents walked and chewed gum at the same time. They prioritized certain individuals for enforcement and also granted a temporary reprieve or protection to those with compelling equities, such as Dreamers.
A final question about that, because this is something else that pops up in the news occasionally. I'm afraid for many of us who don't deal with this, our eyes kind of glaze over. DACA, you mentioned, which is also known as the Dreamer program, and there's another program referring to parents. Can you tell us what these are all about, and are they still in force now that the Trump administration is in power?
Great question. So the DACA, or Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program, was hard to miss. It was announced at the White House Rose Garden in 2012, and it is still operational, and it applies to certain people who came to the United States before the age of 16, who are in school and have graduated, who are not enforcement priorities. More than 700,000 young people have applied for and received DACA, and I would call the program a great success. DACA is a form of prosecutorial discretion. It is not a formal legal status, but it is a temporary reprieve from removal. The program for parents is called DAPA, which stands for Deferred Action for Parents of Americans. It's another type of prosecutorial discretion. It is a program that never went into effect. Under the Obama administration, it was caught up in litigation. It had fair and positive elements. It was aimed at helping parents who are in the United States undocumented, who have children who were U.S. citizens or green card holders, and whose parents have lived here for a long period of time without indiscretion. And in addition to the litigation, we saw several weeks ago the Trump administration rescinding the DAPA program. So that was done through memo by the Department of Homeland Security. And so that program was never operational and now has been rescinded. In my view, that was a bad policy move by the administration.
Folks, this is this whole issue is in a state of flux. It has been for the past 6 months, and it probably will be for at least the foreseeable future. If you're interested in more information, believe me, I've just skimmed the surface here. Beyond the Deportation, Shobha Wadia's book is the first book to comprehensively describe the history and the theory and the application of prosecutorial discretion in immigration law. Shobha Wadia, thanks so much for being with us today. Very enlightening. Thanks so much for your time.
Thanks so much for having me.
So long now.
Midday lottery numbers for you today. The pick 2 is 5858. The pick 3 is 778778. The pick 4, 4639. The pick 5, 46245. The wild ball for each of those is 4. Your treasure hunt is 2, 15, 19, 20, and 24. Estimated jackpot for tomorrow's treasure hunt is $30,000.
Moving from my home of 50 years was a little scary, but I wasn't safe at home anymore, and my daughter with her busy life, children and grandchildren, it wasn't fair for me to expect so much from her.
We looked together to find a new home and discovered New Haven Court at Clearview.
What made the difference were the employees and the residents we met. The residents said it was a great place to live.
New Haven Court at Clearview, a great place to live because it's a great place to work. 888-261-5753 or visit IntegraCare.com.
The Musical Theater Guild of Butler presents its summer show, The Hilarious and Wonderful Nonsense. Show performances July 14, 15, 16, and the 21st, 22nd, and 23rd. The Friday and Saturday night performances are at 7:30, the Sunday matinees at 3. All shows at the William A. Leonard Performance Hall, the MTG Production Center at the far end of Butler Memorial Park. Don't miss Paula Baptiste, Tammy Erkman, Holly Furman, Chris Lilly, and Samantha Roth in Nonsense, the summer show of the Musical Theater Guild of Butler. Buy tickets online at mtgbutler.org or by phone at 28-STAGE.
I must say that I found that conversation with Shobha Wadia educational, talking about immigration and undocumented immigrants and deportation and so on. I don't know anything about it, but I didn't realize, for example, that there was such discretion in ICE, the Immigration and Customs Enforcement Agency, as to who's going to go and who isn't. So, interesting. We thank Shobha for sharing time with us. Also, Holly Muchnock visiting with us earlier on the program today. She's the event director for the upcoming regatta at Lake Arthur, which is just a couple of weekends down the road. First weekend in August is the traditional dates, 2 days, Saturday, Sunday, for the regatta. Coming up on tomorrow's program, Jack Cohen visits with us. He's the director of the Butler County Tourism and Convention Bureau. Talk with Jack also tomorrow. John Pastorius is going to visit with us. John is a pastor at St. John's Reformed Church in Shikora. Ministers from throughout the Carn City School District are joining forces to battle addiction. So we'll talk about that. That sounds interesting, doesn't it? Pastor John Pastorius visiting with us tomorrow to get details on that. Also, is there more violence today in our society or less? We just hear about it more because of all of our communications and social media and 24-hour news and so on and so forth. We'll talk about that with Steve Pinker. So lots of things to discuss on the program tomorrow. Just a reminder, a guest who's visited with us in the past here on the It's Your Turn program, C. William Davis III, he's a local author, going to be making a personal appearance at the Butler Area Public Library this evening. He'll be there at 6 o'clock, signing copies of his books. He's the author of the Forever Man series, three book series of detective thrillers, set for the most part here in Butler County, so it's kind of fascinating. See William Davis at the Butler Area Public Library tonight at 6 o'clock.